The following is a recording of a live questions and answers session with Chris McCann that took place on Friday, November 6th, 2015.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a pre-recorded eBible Fellowship's questions and answers time. This program is designed to interact with you with your questions and comments related to the Bible, and we'll try to respond as well as possible by going to the Bible. And so, with our Bibles at the ready, it's now time to turn things over to our speaker for this pre-recorded questions and answers time and say hello to Chris McCann.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible Fellowship's Friday night question and answer program. Tonight, we're going to take a look at the Bible with any questions or comments that anyone may have. Each person is invited to share what's ever on your mind by contacting us in one of the ways that were mentioned, and we'll be glad to take your question, and I'll try to respond as much as possible by going to the Bible, as the Bible is God's holy word. And it is there that we'll find our answers if the Lord is pleased to open up information to us. Well, we only have a short time together tonight, so we're going to begin right away by going to the first person on the phone. Welcome to our Friday night question and answer program. Please go ahead with your call.
Hi, good evening, Brother Chris. I was looking at Isaiah 9:2, the first part of Isaiah 9:2, where it says the people that walked in darkness had seen a great light. And then this verse is quoted in Matthew 4:16, but there it says that the people which sat in darkness saw a great light. I was wondering what is the significance in using walked in the Old Testament as opposed to sat in the New Testament, and a great light as opposed to just great light.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Let me read the verses you're referring to. Isaiah 9, verse 2, the people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light shined. And then over in Matthew 4, in verse 16, the people which sat in darkness saw great light, and to them which sat in the region and shadow of death, light is sprung up. Well, we know what it means to walk in darkness, because it's the opposite of walking in the light, and walking in the light would be walking in the truth, in the commandments of God, as God directs his people to follow him and to keep his commandments. That's walking in the light. And to do the contrary, to walk in darkness, is to not do the commandments of God, to not walk in truth, but in deceitfulness or falsehoods or lies. And that's exactly what the world does. And so they're in darkness, and they're actively engaged walking in darkness. Now, to sit in the Bible typically points to ruling, as kings sit. For instance, in 2 Thessalonians 2, the man of sin took his seat in the temple, showing himself that he was God. And so I'm not sure why the difference here. God is just adding, he's filling out the teaching. He's giving us more information. But I'm not sure exactly what the emphasis is on the word sat. But thank you for calling and sharing.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Oh, you too. And let's go to our next caller tonight. Welcome to our Friday night question and answer program. Please go ahead with your call.
Hello, Chris. In regards to your current teaching on the separation of the light from the darkness, last night when you taught I immediately was looking at Daniel 12:3, and it's interesting that you brought it up tonight. So my question is, in light of what we are learning, that the possibility that God is creating a new heaven and on earth, and from the destruction of the current creation, can we look at the Daniel 3 referring to the brightness, the true believers who shine a star forever? Can we tie that in with Genesis on the four-day creation, when God created the light bearers and the stars also?
Well, the stars, all the host of them, God does use to picture the seed of Abraham, the elect. And as God uses language concerning the expanse of stretching out the heavens like a tabernacle or a tent to house the sun. Well, also within the heavens are the stars and the moon. It's like a humongous illustration of the kingdom of heaven, of the house of God. Within this tent, there dwells the light, the sun, the moon, and all the stars of heaven, or which would point to God himself, the law of God, typified by the moon, and all the elect are under the tabernacle or the tent of heaven. And it's interesting. I've only just pointed out, I haven't really said anything definitively concerning God creating the new heaven and new earth, but I have pointed out that the language of without form and void, and where that's used in Isaiah and in Jeremiah with the great tribulation and judgment day, it does bring the focus back to the original creation. Judgment brings back to the original creation. And then as God is speaking of the dividing of waters, the waters above and the waters below, well, with the flood, the waters came together again. The waters were no longer divided as they covered the earth. And so judgment brought the waters together again. The waters from above met the waters from below, and the earth was completely underwater, destroyed, and yet that also restored the earth to its original position at creation. When God created without form and void, and then he speaks of darkness upon the face of the waters or the face of the deep. And so it is interesting, both with the illustration of the flood, with the putting out of the lights of the gospel immediately after the tribulation. So there's darkness, and that's the original state, because it was after that God created light and made the division. So it is picturing placing the creation or mankind in his original condition, or the earth in its original condition, ready to be acted upon. At least historically, that's what happened. When it was in that condition, then God began to create over the course of 6 days or 144 hours, which is also very interesting. I never realized that before, but God very definitely wanted creation to take place over those 6 days and 6 days equal 144 hours. And that's the number we find in Revelation 21 that's in view with the new heaven and new earth, 144 cubits according to the measure of a man. And so there is a sort of language that is directing us to the idea that judgment restores the world to a position where now it's sort of like at the gate, or it's at the ready position, ready for God then to begin modeling the clay, forming, and so forth. Of course, this would all be spiritual at this point, but that does appear to be what the Bible is pointing to.
Yes, pretty interesting. And again, I want to thank you. I'm so thankful for the Genesis studies. I really have a lot of excitement, you know, waiting to listen and to learn. It's good stuff. Give God all the praise.
Well, thank you for calling in and sharing your comments. And let's go to our next caller now. Welcome to our Friday night question and answer program. Please go ahead with your call.
Hi. Good evening, Chris. I was looking at Elijah and Elisha, and Elisha asked for double portion of his spirit. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes. When I counted the encounters of Elisha versus Elijah, seems like Elisha had more encounters, like double of Elijah's. Say, for example, if Elijah had 10 challenges, Elisha had about 22, like, you know, 22 occasions.
Well, that's interesting, but it could relate, but I think that we would be better to follow the words that are used there in 2 Kings 2 in verse 9. It says, "Ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee." And Elisha said, "I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me." And he said, "Thou hast asked the hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be so." And it would, you know, I haven't checked out those words, but it would be good for us to follow those words and see what all that's in view. I'm not sure exactly what that double portion of God's spirit is referring to. We know that Christ did say that the elect who would follow and come after him would do far more than he did. Or that's paraphrasing it, but that was the idea that was expressed in the New Testament as the gospel went out into all the world. So it's interesting. I don't think it would be limited just to the miracles that God worked through these men. Okay. There would be more involved
also,
to it than that.
Okay. Also, Elisha was calling Elijah father, and that reminds me of John 5:19-20. That the Son was saying, Jesus was saying, the Son will do greater works, as if you can, if we would read 5:19.
Okay, all right, that's a good couple of verses to go to. In John 5:19, "Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth, and he will show him greater works than these, that ye may marvel. Well, that maybe that's in view. That's a possibility that Elijah could be a picture of one person of the Godhead, and Elisha another. I'm just not that familiar with the historical book to say one way or another. We do know that these men are types and figures, and we know that they are types and figures of Christ or God himself, and so it would just require taking some time and going through carefully to see how it fits together, and maybe the Lord will help us to do that at some point. But thank you for calling and sharing. And let's go to our next caller. Welcome to our question and answer program tonight. Please go ahead with your call.
Hi, Chris. Could you please read Ephesians 4, verses 23 and 24, and Romans 6, verses 4?
Ephesians 4, verses 23 and 24. It says, "And be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness." And then Romans 6, 4.
Yes.
Okay. "Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life."
Speak on those that are renewed in the spirit of their mind, that they should walk in newness of life.
Well, yeah, as it says there in Ephesians 4:23, be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Now, often in the Bible, heart, mind, and soul are synonymous. If it said, for instance, and be renewed in the spirit of your soul or the spirit of your heart, we would immediately think salvation. And that is what's in view with the word mind also. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind. And that would require being born again. Ye must be born again. And then we become a new creature. And in our soul existence or in our mind, remember how the Apostle Paul is moved to express the distinction between the soul and the physical body in Romans chapter 7. He says in Romans 7 in verse 22, "For I delight in the law of God after the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then with the mind, I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin." Here, Paul is moved to say that he serves God with his mind. Now, we have to be careful about that, because and he's also pointing out sin is in the flesh, it's in the body. Well, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean we're never going to have a sinful thought? We're not going to stray in our mind, in our thinking? And we know that's not true. We know there's sin in our physical mind, because our physical mind is part of the flesh. It's part of the flesh. But the spiritual mind is centered in the soul, in the heart, that God has changed. He's given us a new heart and a new spirit, and you know, we could add, based on the way the mind is used, and a new mind. We have the mind of Christ. It says in 1 Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 2, the last verse of that chapter, in verse 16, "For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ." Now, it's true that on one level, that's the Bible. But it's also true on another level, as the Lord said of David, "He is a man after mine own heart." The heart we receive is fashioned after Christ's heart. Well, again, synonymous, the mind is synonymous with the heart. So we have a mind after the mind of Christ. It's fashioned after his mind. It's a new, born again mind. But again, it's not to be confused with the physical mind that should, of course, be more and more obedient and come under the will of God and be in submission to the will of God more and more in our physical mind as God leads us by his Spirit and directs us into grace and grants us the ability to keep his commandments more and more. And we know that includes the thoughts as well as the deeds. And yes, that will be coming under control, as that's part of the body that is brought under. But still, no, it's sometimes not realized or often mistaken, where people think the references in the Bible that "be renewed in your mind" and so forth is talking about your actual physical mind, and it's not. But thank you for calling and sharing.
Thank you.
And let's go to our next caller. Welcome to our question and answer program. Please go ahead with your call.
Hi, Chris. We know that it was still in the day of spiritual judgment that began on May 21, 2011. But something had to be completed at the end of the 10,000 consecutive days of spiritual judgment that just happened to land on the Feast of Tabernacles. Unless it was just another snare that October 7th just happened to land on that day, it's just, to me, there's no way that the 10,000 days was just for nothing. It has to be a foundation for us to build upon for whatever else God will reveal. No way all those proofs were just wrong.
Well,
I just don't see it.
Well, you know, when things harmonize, when they fit together,
yeah,
that's when the believers recognize, okay, this is how God teaches. This is how he shows that something is correct. Well, but our conclusion was wrong. It was not the end of the world. But it doesn't mean that the evidence was false evidence. No, we look at it and the evidence is still evidence pointing to that particular day. And so now we have to revisit, and we're helped because it wasn't the end of the world. So we can eliminate that as a possibility, but then we have to think, and God has to help us and grant us the ability to understand what was it? How does it fit? And in what way? And also be open to, all right, we could have been wrong about something, and whatever it is, Lord, teach us and show us. And I don't know at this point. I just don't know what it was. There are some interesting passages that we'll review, if possible, if we have time. We'll go into these passages and look at things, how the land was given or conquered little by little. We'll look at the Genesis 8 flood account, Lord willing. We're also eventually maybe going to look at Ezekiel 38 and 39. Ezekiel 39 has always been awkward. It's always been a problem area.
Really?
Trying to fit in either scenario of the Great Tribulation or Judgment Day. Let me just go there to maybe this will just give people some things to think about. I don't have any answers about it, but in Ezekiel 39, we read of Gog and Magog, who from Revelation 20 we know is language identifying Satan and the Gentiles that came against the camp of the saints. Basically, Satan's kingdom. He is Gog, the unsaved are Magog. Well, God kills them, or they're defeated. In the first few verses, it says, for instance, in verse 4 of Ezekiel 39, "Thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and all thy bands, and the people that is with thee. I will give thee unto the ravenous birds of every sort, and to the beasts of the field to be devoured." Now, this matches other language of Revelation 19, where Satan comes and his forces, he's defeated. The language of the fowls of the heaven feeding upon them is language of Judgment Day. And this is also the point when Gog and Magog cease to win. They were winning before. They were overcoming, very much like Babylon. But now they're defeated. Well, then God says in verse 6, "And I'll send a fire on Magog, and among them that dwell carelessly in the isles," or the continents, "and they shall know I am Jehovah. So will I make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel, and will not let them pollute my holy name anymore. And the heathen," or the Gentiles, "shall know I am Jehovah, the Holy One in Israel." Then, in verse 9, "And they that dwell in the cities of Israel shall go forth and shall set on fire and burn the weapons, both the shields and the bucklers, the bows and the arrows and the hand staves and the spears, and they shall burn them with fire 7 years. And that's an interesting statement, because normally we associate 7 years with the Great Tribulation. The famine in Joseph's day was 7 years. But Gog and Magog are already defeated. And Gog and Magog, if you go to Revelation 20, came against the camp of the saints during the time of the Great Tribulation. They're defeated at the end of the Great Tribulation. But God here is mentioning a 7 year period of burning their weapons. And it doesn't end there. Then it goes on to talk about burying of Magog for 7 months. And 7 months is also a figure normally associated with the Great Tribulation, as the Ark of the Covenant was taken captive by the Philistines for 7 months. And this is the reason that I've had trouble with this passage, and others have had trouble with this passage, is the reference to 7 years and 7 months are references normally associated with the Great Tribulation, but they do not fit the context, because the context is that Gog and Magog are destroyed, which happens at the end of the Great Tribulation. So here we have two periods of time given, 7 years and 7 months, that are something we need to check out, and by God's grace, maybe he'll give us understanding concerning how they can fit. Maybe it is the Great Tribulation, but I'm not seeing how we can fit all the language here and apply it to the Great Tribulation. It's sort of like if we read in of Babylon's fall, which occurred at the end of the 70 years. Well, Gog and Magog are destroyed at the end of the 23-year Great Tribulation. And then we have time references that relate to Great Tribulation or would seem to relate to Great Tribulation, but the Great Tribulation is past. So it's just something for us to consider. But thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
For calling and sharing. And let's go to our next caller. Welcome to our Friday night question and answer program. Please go ahead with your call.
Good evening, Chris. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Hello. On tonight's studies, Chris, you said that, okay, well, this is what I learned, that the heavens, and I have a question on this, the heavens had been created on the first day. Now, on the second day, at God's command, he said, let there be a firmament. God made a division between the waters above and the waters below. I understand this separation to be both spiritual for the aspect of the creation and also physical for the tangible world of man. You know, God creates the earth, which includes also the solar system. Now, on the second day, I was reading further, is the only day that the Bible does not say what God says, it was good. Is it because this term, it was good, God uses it only when something is completed, because the earth really appears, you know, although it created it on day one, it really does appear on the third day. That's what we have mentioned of the earth on the third day more explicitly. And is there a reason why God on the second day does not say on the separation of the waters this was good? In fact, God says only it was so.
When oh, well, well, I appreciate that. I didn't notice that. Of course, we know it was good because the final verse of Genesis 1, verse 31, says, and God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good.
Yeah.
And that would apply
to
the heavens. But it is interesting, and it has to be significant. I don't know why that God would not qualify the second day creation of the firmament with that statement. It's something to look at. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Oh, okay. And also, I've learned something. I know, I'm sure you do too. The name Earth from Greek means to desire. I mean, to me, that was the first time that I discovered this, and it's a beautiful thing. You know, God desired to create the Earth, you know. I was reading that the earth in Hebrew is to desire, translates to desire. I mean,
I don't know about that. Maybe it does, but I'm not aware of it.
Yeah,
but thank you. Thank you for calling and sharing.
All right. And thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Let's see if we have a question from Pal Talk. This person writes, I was wondering, with the weather being very abnormal for the month of November, do you think this has anything to do with the world being so close to the end? And no, it doesn't have anything to do with the world being close to the end or anything spiritual. The weather, remember Jesus said when the Pharisees or the Jewish leaders wanted a sign and an indicator that no sign will be given but the sign of the prophet Jonah. So no outward sign is ever given by God. He's not going to give a sign in the sky above. We should never expect that. It's not going to be weather related in any sense, but the only sign God gives is the sign of the prophet Jonah. The disciples asked Jesus in Matthew 24, "What is the sign of thy coming and the end of the world?" And then Jesus went on to explain in great detail the sign that, and it's all scripture, the sign God permits is that which is found in the Bible, just like Jonah. In order to understand the sign of Jonah, you have to turn to the book of Jonah and read it. You have to find signs in the Bible. And then we can have some indicator of things to come because it's based on something God has said in his word. But never is it out of the Bible, outside the Bible. Wars or evil dictators or any kind of political struggle or weather pattern never has anything to do with spiritual things. It's not to be our focus. We're not to look in that direction at all. Well, thank you for being with us tonight. We have come to the end of our time. And thank you all for sharing your questions and comments, and especially the Bible verses we had an opportunity to read and consider. Lord willing, this coming Sunday, please join us again for another question and answer program, and also in our online fellowship time beginning around 12:30 p.m. Sunday afternoon, that's Eastern time, where we hope to continue a series in the book of Proverbs, starting in chapter 1. And then following that, we'll have another question and answer program on Sunday afternoon. But for now, I'll say good night, and may the Lord's perfect will be done.
And thank you for joining us again for eBible Fellowship's Questions and Answers time with your speaker, Chris McCann. You can join us for these questions and answers sessions Sunday afternoons following the Sunday studies and certain weeknights following the Monday through Friday studies. Check eBibleFellowship.com for the current schedule. Until next time, may the Lord's perfect will be done.